Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Manoush Zomorodi, sitting in for Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Who's getting excited about seeing fresh strawberries, rhubarb, and asparagus at the farmer's market? I know I am. Well, before we rush off with our reusable bags and fill them with locally grown produce, we need to hear from my next guest. Margaret Gray is an associate professor of political science at Adelphi University, and she's the author of Labor and the Locavore, The Making of a Comprehensive Food Ethic. Margaret, thanks for being here.
Thank you. It's great to be here, Manoush.
So you looked at the labor practices of farms in the Hudson Valley specifically, right?
Yes.
And what did you find?
What I found was that the labor conditions on these smaller local farms that are providing the produce for the farmers markets and the restaurants, the labor conditions are remarkably similar to those on the corporate industrial farms that we think about when we think about farm worker exploitation.
Right. I mean, there's so many beautiful farmers markets here in New York City. And not only do you feel as a shopper that you're getting delicious food, but you also feel like you're supporting these wholesome, loving farms that are essentially our neighbors, right?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the local food movement has really taken off in the past 10 years. And there's no question that we've seen great benefits, I think. We're so much more aware of how our food grows. We can ask questions about pesticides. We know how our animals are being treated. And we're supporting local farmers who really need our food dollars. And I think in the food writing and in the media storm about all the benefits of local, I think farm workers have largely been erased from the equation. And we've been led to believe that the conditions of the workers, like these other conditions, are better on these regional farms.
But they're not? What did you observe in terms of the conditions of farm workers?
Well, the first thing to consider is the law itself. Most people are probably unaware that farm workers were excluded from the main labor legislation that was passed during the New Deal. So specifically, they don't have a right to overtime pay. They don't have a
at all.
At all. They don't have a right to a day of rest, and they don't have collective bargaining protections.
So the New Deal was a long time ago. How come?
Yes.
What's happened there?
It was largely about power, and Southern Democrats, who FDR was completely reliant on those Southern Democrats in order to get support, and they didn't want their workers, who were largely black, farm workers and domestic workers, they didn't understand why they should be seeing any gains in labor legislation. And so it was a compromise because it was the only way those laws were going to be passed. So really very racist underpinnings for the exclusion.
So do you have a story that you like to tell that sort of illustrates what a typical farm worker's life is like on one of these farms?
Sure. Yes. I remember speaking to Marcos about his situation. And I just – simple question. I asked about his hours. And he said, well, we're usually in the fields at 6 in the morning. We take about an hour break and go home for lunch. We go back to work. We have dinner in the fields. And then we're often in the packing house until 10 or 11 o'clock at night. And I sort of didn't believe him. And so I really pushed him, and his family was around, and they were saying, no, we don't get to see our dad. We don't get to see our husband. I was interviewing in the wintertime. And so not fully believing what he said, I drove by the farm on several occasions, and indeed I saw them there working those hours. And this wasn't just for a stretch of two-week peak harvest. This was the scenario for several months at a time. And these workers were making minimum wage, so it was $7.25 an hour, and they were logging 80 to 90 hour work weeks. So they were really getting straight minimum wage.
Any benefits there?
You know what? So a lot of times there's perks from the farm. So workers can take food home. Maybe they get to use a farm vehicle, or they get to use house their family with them. And these perks are great, but the problem with the perks is they can be taken away, and workers are so worried that they're going to lose the perks that they don't complain about their situations. So this really feeds into a power dynamic on the farm that makes it difficult for workers to speak up.
Listeners, do you like to buy food that you know has been grown locally? Do you have a question for Margaret Gray on how to be an ethical locavore? Call in at 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. And so, Margaret, is what you're saying then that we shouldn't buy local food?
I'm saying the opposite. I'm a locavore myself. Go to the farmer's market, get the farmer's item off the menu at the restaurant. I think we should strive to really create a thriving local food system in and around the New York area. And I think the more we can see the growth of small farmers and their profits increase, the better chance that they're going to pass on some of those profits to their workers. So I say keep supporting local, definitely.
I mean, it's sort of a traditional job in a way. That, you know, you think of farm work, I think of the Grapes of Wrath, which was recently celebrating an anniversary. It's hard but dignified work, right? So what do you say to someone who says, well, you know what, maybe those people want to work those hours. They want to earn money. They want to send it back to their families. What's wrong with that?
So, well, first of all, most of the workers I spoke to said they do love the work. They like working outside. They love to see things grow. They don't like doing it under these conditions. I think the reason why they work the hours they do is because they don't get the benefits of overtime pay. So they feel like they have to log these 80 and 90 hour work weeks because of the way the law is structured. There's real systemic problems in their ability to earn enough money.
But what about the farmers? Because their profit margin must be incredibly small. What if, you know, they just can't afford to pay?
So what we should think about is that if the New York Farm Bureau tells us that the average farm worker makes $10 an hour and works 60 hours a week. So whomever is paying those average farm workers, they wouldn't be hurt very much by an overtime bill, by a day of rest bill. These farmers are really creative business people, and they could easily just lower the base salary to accommodate for the overtime pay. So what we're talking about is the farmers who are paying straight minimum wage, the ones who are charging workers for their housing, the ones who are not giving any other perks, those are the ones who I think are going to feel it a little bit for sure.
And in terms of complaining, have you talked to any of the farm workers who, I don't know, maybe they've thought about unionizing or something like that?
So collective bargaining means actually getting together and asking for a change. So if you and I were working on a farm and we didn't like the conditions and we gathered some of our friends and said, hey, we would just like a 25% an hour raise, we could be fired just like that because we don't have the protections for collective bargaining. So I think it's really tough for workers. There are some advocacy movements in New York State. There's a Justice for Farm Workers campaign. And so some farm workers have tried to plug into that campaign. But largely, it's really about spreading the word to the public to make the public more aware so that the public can pressure legislators to change the law.
Let's take a question. I want to go to Pearl in Soho. Hi, Pearl.
Hi, hello.
Hi, go ahead.
This is such an important issue. Thanks for your book. I was wondering if there's any farms that you would suggest that we support as consumers that really have exemplary practices.
I can't point to any specific farms. I say talk to the farmers. You know, if you talk to farmers and say, hey, I'd really like to support a farm where workers are getting a living wage, where workers can take a sick day and not feel as though they're going to be reprimanded for it. So I think really talk to the farmers. And the same way we would have said, what are your pesticide practices? Oh, well, I'd rather support a farm that has organic practices. So if you move to organic, I'll come back and support you. I think we can have the same conversation with farmers.
So really going sort of grassroots and letting them know, I will come to your farm stand if I know that your work practices are exemplary.
Exactly. But I think even if we find the handful of farms that we think we want to support, it really doesn't change the systemic problems with the labor laws and the power dynamics on the farm. So I think we have to look at it a much bigger picture as well.
Let's go to Liz in Washington Heights. Hi, Liz. You're on the air.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Go ahead.
Oh, great. I'm an infectious disease physician at one of the public hospitals in New York City, and I take care of a lot of immigrants who I think work under not the best circumstances. And I just wanted to sort of bring up the whole issue of the lack of sort of social safety net for patients, specifically medical insurance, that really results in enormous public costs. So, you know, those of us who live well and buy healthy organic food have much greater protections than the people from, you know, who are providing that food. And I think unless there's some kind of, you know, I just wondered if you wanted to say anything about health insurance. My sense is that unless there's some comprehensive, you know, benefit that's available for everybody, people at the bottom of the ladder are always going to be vulnerable to be replaced by other people. And specifically, we're taking care of a woman now with tuberculosis. Her husband couldn't come to the hospital for various reasons because he worked upstate on a farm. And when he finally came in, he's probably the source of her tuberculosis. And, you know, the health department has to investigate whether there's been transmission at the workplace. And there are lots of other people who've been likely exposed to this man. And it's a huge public cost that somebody's paying for, but it keeps the cost of the food down. And I think, you know, maybe we have to pay more.
Oh, Liz, thanks so much for calling in. Go ahead, Margaret.
So, Liz, I think you're right. I think we can really look at the way farm workers are treated and their wages as probably the greatest subsidy that the farm industry has. And I do also want to point out that the government does provide a minimum level of health care to workers. There are fantastic migrant health clinics and some very dedicated medical professionals. But part of the problem is that farm workers are often reluctant to miss a day of work to go to the doctor. And they still might have to pay for the medications.
Mm-hmm.
And then the follow-up visits, they often find impossible. So some of it's really about empowering workers as well to feel as though that they can tell their employer, hey, you know what, I really need to take another day off. And I've certainly heard cases where farmers have taken workers to the doctor and farmers have even foot the bill for them. So I think that there's just a range of the way workers are treated. But I was even speaking to a farm worker earlier this week who was talking about pesticides and how concerned so many workers were about pesticide practices because they feel like their exposure to them is a little too much, mm-hmm. and they're really not sure what the effect is on their bodies.
Oh, God, it can't be good. All right, let's go to Eli in Brooklyn. Eli, you have a question. You there, Eli?
The treatment of workers is obviously a really important issue. But I've heard of much more abusive practices in other parts of the country, like the Southern Poverty Law Center did a study on tomato workers that made it seem like their work conditions are almost slavery. And I wonder, since there are so many advantages to New Yorkers buying locally, to shine this big light on local farming practices, if that's going to maybe make it harder for the local farmers and distract attention from the even worse labor practices that I've heard about in other parts of the country.
So the lesser of evils is the question, really. Margaret, is this going to cause problems for these farms?
You know, pretty much every issue that the Southern Poverty Law Center, that Oxfam and other organizations have written about that take place on farms around the country have also happened in New York. And, you know, these are extreme cases. But the first case of human trafficking tried under the Trafficked Victims Protection Act of 2000 was a case of an upstate labor contractor who had been essentially imprisoning workers. So you know what? The slavery cases have also happened in New York. I think New York has a smaller farming industry than other states. And so just sort of statistically, you're going to find maybe more cases of these extreme abuses in other states.
So the other side of locavore, my guest has been Margaret Gray, author of Labor and the Locavore, The Making of a Comprehensive Food Ethic. You can check out the book if you want to learn more because we have a lot of calls coming in, but we can't take you all. Margaret, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Manish.